Chapter 98. Something wrong somewhere. The family had been a month or two at Venice, when Mr. Dorrit, who was much among counts and marquises, and had but scant leisure, set an hour of one day apart, beforehand, for the purpose of holding some conference with Mrs. General. The time he had reserved in his mind arriving, he sent Mr. Tinkler, his valet, to Mrs. General's apartment, which would have absorbed about a third of the area of the Marshalsea, to present his compliments to that lady, and represent him as desiring the favor of an interview. It being that period of the forenoon, when the various members of the family had coffee in their own chambers, some couple of hours before assembling at breakfast in a faded hall which had once been sumptuous, but was now the prey of watery vapors and a settled melancholy, Mrs. General was accessible to the valet. That envoy found her on a little square of carpet, so extremely diminutive in reference to the size of her stone and marble floor, that she looked as if she might have had it spread for the trying on of a ready-made pair of shoes, or as if she had come into possession of the enchanted piece of carpet, bought for 40 purses by one of the three princes in the Arabian Nights, and at that moment been transported on it, at a wish, into a palatial saloon with which it had no connection. Mrs. General, replying to the envoy, as she set down her empty coffee cup, that she was willing at once to proceed to Mr. Dorrit's apartment, and spare him the trouble of coming to her, which, in his gallantry, he had proposed, the envoy threw open the door, and escorted Mrs. General to the presence. It was quite a walk, by mysterious staircases and corridors, from Mrs. General's apartment, hoodwinked by a narrow side street with a low gloomy bridge in it, and dungeon-like opposite tenements, their walls besmeared with a thousand downward stains and streaks, as if every crazy aperture in them had been weeping tears of rust into the Adriatic for centuries, to Mr. Dorrit's apartment. With a whole English house front of window, a prospect of beautiful church domes rising into the blue sky sheer out of the water which reflected them, and a hushed murmur of the Grand Canal laving the doorways below, where his gondolas and gondoliers attended his pleasure, drowsily swinging in a little forest of piles. Mr. Dorrit, in a resplendent dressing gown and cap, the dormant grub that had so long bided its time among the collegians, had burst into a rare butterfly rose to receive Mrs. General. A chair to Mrs. General. An easier chair, sir. What are you doing? What are you about? What do you mean? Now, leave us. Mrs. General, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit. I took the liberty, apostrophe, by no means, apostrophe, Mrs. General interposed. I was quite at your disposition. I had had my coffee. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I took the liberty, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit again, with the magnificent placidity of one who was above correction, to solicit the favor of a little private conversation with you, because I feel rather worried respecting my younger daughter. You will have observed a great difference of temperament, madam, between my two daughters? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. General in response, crossing her gloved hands. She was never without gloves, and they never creased and always fitted. There is a great difference. Apostrophe, may I ask to be favored with your view of it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Dorrit, with a deference not incompatible with majestic serenity. Fanny, apostrophe, returned Mrs. General, has force of character and self-reliance. Amy, none. Apostrophe, none? Oh, Mrs. General, ask the Marshalsea stones and bars. Oh, Mrs. General, ask the milliner who taught her to work, and the dancing master who taught her sister to dance. Oh, Mrs. General, ask me, her father, what I owe her, and hear my testimony touching the life of this slighted little creature from her childhood up. No such adjuration entered Mr. Dorrit's head. He looked at Mrs. General, seated in her usual erect attitude on her coach box behind the proprieties, and he said in a thoughtful manner, "True, madam." Apostrophe, I would not, apostrophe, said Mrs. General, be understood to say, observe, that there is nothing to improve in Fanny. But there is material there perhaps, indeed, a little too much. Apostrophe, will you be kind enough, madam, apostrophe said Mr. Dorrit, to be more explicit? I do not quite understand my elder daughter's having too much material. What material? Apostrophe, Fanny, apostrophe returned Mrs. General, at present forms too many opinions. Perfect breeding forms none, and is never demonstrative. Apostrophe, lest he himself should be found deficient in perfect breeding, Mr. Dorrit hastened to reply, unquestionably, madam, you are right. Apostrophe Mrs. General returned, in her emotionless and expressionless manner, I believe so. Apostrophe, but you are aware, my dear madam, apostrophe said Mr. Dorrit, that my daughters had the misfortune to lose their lamented mother when they were very young, and that, in consequence of my not having been until lately the recognized heir to my property, they have lived with me as a comparatively poor, though always proud, gentleman, in retirement. Apostrophe apostrophe, I do not, apostrophe said Mrs. General, lose sight of the circumstance. Apostrophe madam, pursued Mr. Dorrit, of my daughter Fanny, under her present guidance, and with such an example constantly before her apostrophe, Mrs. General shudderized. I have no misgivings. There is adaptability of character in Fanny. But my younger daughter, Mrs. General, rather worries and vexes my thoughts. I must inform you that she has always been my favorite. Apostrophe, there is no accounting, apostrophe said Mrs. General, for these partialities. Apostrophe, no, apostrophe assented Mr. Dorrit. No. Now, madam, I am troubled by noticing that Amy is not, so to speak, one of ourselves. She does not care to go about with us. She is lost in the society we have here. Our tastes are evidently not her tastes. Which, apostrophe said Mr. Dorrit, summing up with judicial gravity, is to say, in other words, that there is something wrong in Amy. Apostrophe, may we incline to the supposition, apostrophe said Mrs. General, with a little touch of varnish, that something is referable to the novelty of the position? Apostrophe apostrophe, excuse me, madam, apostrophe observed Mr. Dorrit, rather quickly. The daughter of a gentleman, though himself at one time comparatively far from affluent comparatively and herself reared in retirement, need not of necessity find this position so very novel. Apostrophe, true, apostrophe said Mrs. General, true. Apostrophe, therefore, madam, apostrophe said Mr. Dorrit, I took the liberty he laid an emphasis on the phrase and repeated it, as though he stipulated, with urbane firmness, that he must not be contradicted again. I took the liberty of requesting this interview, in order that I might mention the topic to you, and inquire how you would advise me? Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Dorrit, apostrophe returned Mrs. General, I have conversed with Amy several times, since we have been residing here, on the general subject of the formation of a demeanor. She has expressed herself to me as wondering exceedingly at Venice. I have mentioned to her that it is better not to wonder. I have pointed out to her that the celebrated Mr. Eustace, the classical tourist, did not think much of it, and that he compared the Rialto, greatly to its disadvantage, with Westminster and Blackfriars Bridges. I need not add, after what you have said, that I have not yet found my arguments successful. You do me the honor to ask me what to advise. It always appears to me if this should prove to be a baseless assumption, I shall be pardoned that Mr. Dorrit has been accustomed to exercise influence over the minds of others. Apostrophe, madam, apostrophe said Mr. Dorrit, I have been at the head of a considerable community. You are right in supposing that I am not unaccustomed to an influential position. Apostrophe, I am happy, apostrophe returned Mrs. General, to be so corroborated. I would therefore the more confidently recommend that Mr. Dorrit should speak to Amy himself, and make his observations and wishes known to her. being his favorite. Besides, and no doubt attached to him, she is all the more likely to yield to his influence. Apostrophe, I had anticipated your suggestion, madam, apostrophe said Mr. Dorrit, but I was not sure that I might not encroach on apostrophe on my province, Mr. Dorrit. Apostrophe said Mrs. General, graciously. Do not mention it. Apostrophe, then, with your leave, madam, apostrophe resumed Mr. Dorrit, ringing his little bell to summon his valet, I will send for her at once. Apostrophe, does Mr. Dorrit wish me to remain? Apostrophe, perhaps, if you have no other engagement, you would not object for a minute, or two, apostrophe, not at all. Apostrophe, so, Tinkler the valet was instructed to find Miss Amy's maid, and to request that subordinate to inform Miss Amy that Mr. Dorrit wished to see her in his own room. In delivering this charge to Tinkler, Mr. Dorrit looked severely at him, and also kept a jealous eye upon him until he went out at the door, mistrusting that he might have something in his mind prejudicial to the family dignity, that he might have even got wind of some collegiate joke before he came into the service, and might be derisively reviving its remembrance at the present moment. If Tinkler had happened to smile, however faintly and innocently, nothing would have persuaded Mr. Dorrit, to the hour of his death, but that this was the case. As Tinkler happened, however, very fortunately for himself, to be of a serious and composed countenance, he escaped the secret danger that threatened him. And as on his return, when Mr. Dorrit eyed him again, he announced Miss Amy, as if she had come to a funeral, he left a vague impression on Mr. Dorrit's mind, that he was a well-conducted young fellow, who had been brought up in the study of his catechism by a widowed mother. Amy, apostrophe said Mr. Dorrit, you have just now been the subject of some conversation between myself and Mrs. General. We agree that you scarcely seem at home here. How is this? Apostrophe, a pause. I think, father, I require a little time. Apostrophe, papa is a preferable mode of address, apostrophe observed Mrs. General. Father is rather vulgar, my dear. The word papa, besides, gives a pretty form to the lips. Papa, potatoes, poultry, prunes, and prism are all very good words for the lips. Especially prunes and prism. You will find it serviceable, in the formation of a demeanor, if you sometimes say to yourself in company on entering a room, for instance, papa, potatoes, poultry, prunes and prism, prunes and prism. Apostrophe, pray, my child, apostrophe said Mr. Dorrit, attend to the precepts of Mrs. General. Apostrophe, poor little Dorrit, with a rather forlorn glance at that eminent varnisher, promised to try. You say, Amy, apostrophe pursued Mr. Dorrit, that you think you require time. Time for what? Apostrophe, another pause. To become accustomed to the novelty of my life, was all I meant, apostrophe said little Dorrit, with her loving eyes upon her father, whom she had very nearly addressed as poultry, if not prunes and prism too, in her desire to submit herself to Mrs. General and please him. Mr. Dorrit frowned, and looked anything but pleased. Amy, apostrophe he returned, it appears to me, I must say, that you have had abundance of time for that. How you surprise me. You disappoint me. Fanny has conquered any such little difficulties, and why not you? Apostrophe, I hope I shall do better soon, apostrophe said little Dorrit. I hope so, apostrophe returned her father. I most devoutly hope so, Amy. I sent for you, in order that I might say impressively say, in the presence of Mrs. General, to whom we are all so much indebted for obligingly being present among us, on this or any other occasion, apostrophe Mrs. General shudder eyes, that I am not pleased with you. You make Mrs. General's a thankless task. You embarrass me very much. You have always, as I have informed Mrs. General, been my favorite child. I have always made you a friend and companion. In return, I do beg, that you accommodate yourself better to circumstances, and dutifully do what becomes your station. Mr. Dorrit was even a little more fragmentary than usual, being excited on the subject and anxious to make himself particularly emphatic. I do beg, he repeated, that this may be attended to, and that you will seriously take pains, and try to conduct yourself in a manner both becoming your position as Miss Amy Dorrit, and satisfactory to myself and Mrs. General. That lady shut her eyes again, on being again referred to, then, slowly opening them and rising, added these words. If Miss Amy Dorrit will direct her own attention to, and will accept of my poor assistance in, the formation of a surface, Mr. Dorrit will have no further cause of anxiety. May I take this opportunity of remarking, as an instance in point, that it is scarcely delicate to look at vagrants with the attention which I have seen bestowed upon them by a very dear young friend of mine? They should not be looked at. Nothing disagreeable should ever be looked at. Apart from such a habit standing in the way of that graceful equanimity of surface which is so expressive of good breeding, it hardly seems compatible with refinement of mind. A truly refined mind will seem to be ignorant of the existence of anything that is not perfectly proper, placid, and pleasant. Having delivered this exalted sentiment, Mrs. General made a sweeping obeisance, and retired with an expression of mouth indicative of prunes and prism. Little Dorrit, whether speaking or silent, had preserved her quiet earnestness and her loving look. It had not been clouded, except for a passing moment, until now. But now that she was left alone with him, the fingers of her lightly folded hands were agitated, and there was repressed emotion in her face. Not for herself. She might feel a little wounded, but her care was not for herself. Her thoughts still turned, as they always had turned, to him. A faint misgiving, which had hung about her since their accession to fortune, that even now she could never see him as he used to be before the prison days, had gradually begun to assume form in her mind. She felt that, in what he had just now said to her, and in his whole bearing towards her, there was the well-known shadow of the Marshalsea wall. It took a new shape, but it was the old sad shadow. She began with sorrowful unwillingness to acknowledge to herself that she was not strong enough to keep. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.